Good evening and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you from VOA in Washington. I'm Douglas Impoga. This evening we'll talk about the impact of the youth in African politics. With us tonight is my colleague, Vincent Macquarie, managing editor of VOA's Africa 54, and Suleiman Mgula, an independent political analyst based in Durban, South Africa. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure.
You're very much welcome. As I said again, we are talking about the impact of the youth, and youth have a record in Africa. They made things happen in South Africa way back in apartheid days. But now recently we saw protests which began in opposition to the Nigerian government's widely unpopular special anti-robbery squad morph into a widespread leaderless movement against police brutality, economic mismanagement, rampant corruption, and arbitrary state power. Unfortunately, in this, the authorities in Nigeria, the way they reacted resulted in some deaths. So let's pick it up from there, Vincent. Is this a harbinger of what may happen in Nigeria and across the continent, where youth take it within their, in their own hands to demand for change?
You know, when the youth try to speak to the authority and they do not get a favorable response, when you see people pouring onto the streets, it means somebody is not listening. And protests basically are a form of expressing yourself in frustration. Otherwise, if the proper channels were to be opened through the leadership, from local leadership, and the authorities are willing to listen, there would not be any need for young men and women to pour onto the streets. Now, in this case of Nigeria, definitely the youth are protesting against what has been claimed to be a criminality from the Special Anti-Robbery Squad, where there's been accusations of extortion and extrajudicial killings. Now, I don't have any way of proving that, but the fact is that those people on the streets say they have evidence of having gone through the harassment and brutality of this squad. Now, why did we have to witness all this violence? It means there was no method, there was no mechanism of listening to these people and offering a solution and giving a promise or acting quickly to stop it. We saw the president later on come out and speak and say we need to approach it such, you know, rather differently. We need to talk about it. This is something that should have been there way before. So this is not a good way forward, because it tells you that if other youths in other countries feel increasingly frustrated, you're likely to see them pour onto the streets. And you know what? It may lead to more deaths, because many times, again, it is the same youth who get killed. They are the same who get to suffer, and their families, of course.
I see. Suleiman, Africa is a younger continent, and actually it's imperative on the youth to make change happen. What do you think?
Yes, true. And it has been a process, and it is almost coming to a final end. It has been a process. If you see where the political development has been, where we are now, we should appreciate the fact that there has been a gradual increase in civic awareness as far as the youths are concerned. Ever since the overthrow of Gaddafi, then we went into the Arab Spring, then we went into the fall of Compaoré, then we come to Omar Bashir, and so on up to the present day where we are. You are seeing increasing number of young people getting involved into politics. You are getting bigger and bigger numbers of young people not only getting interested in politics or getting participating in politics, but they are now even demanding to be leaders themselves. It seems it is a wave which has come in the continent, and it is increasing. But their activeness now, they are being so active, they are being so concerned, should be understood from the background. It's not that they have just woken up, but the circumstances have forced them. the history of the continent for the past 6 years is forcing them to come up and take charge. Look at what the leadership, the cohort of leaders whom we have had on the continent for the last 60 years. In many of these countries, there is little to show off. At the moment, the young people are facing immense problems of unemployment, of poverty, of expensive education, of corruption, of nepotism, of infrastructure decay. You find the hospitals are collapsing, the roads are either substandards or they are also not there. You find that in some countries, for example, in countries like Uganda, you may find that only 10 kilometers from the capital or in a town, the roads are basically impassable. Sometimes even the roads within the capital itself, in countries like Uganda, capital like Kampala, you can't move. You have got lakes of water when it rains. The potholes are as huge as lakes. So when they look at what the so-called leaders have done, they are forced to come up. They are forced to rise up. That is why you are seeing this increase in their participation. Against all this, you have a rusted leadership, an arrogant leadership, a callous leadership, a selfish leadership, which shows no concern about the interests of the people. It is so detached. You find that most of our leaders, some of them spend time on planes abroad, some of them spend time in their state houses enjoying themselves, their children, most of the leadership now, the children are studying in outside universities. They have got the best jobs in international organization. So you find there is a divide now between those who have power and the rest of the country. So the youth are forced to do what they are doing now because of the circumstances which they are finding themselves in.
I see. Vicente, don't you think that the youth have different objectives, goals, as opposed to these guys who don't seem to care about what happens to their in the future?
I mean, every young person, and we were once young people, wanted to grow up, get a good education, get a job, get an income, take care of his life, marry possibly for those who want to marry and have children, take care of them. Now, when you get to a certain point and you had all these dreams as a younger person, we all dream big. You get to a point, they say, education becomes a struggle because of the poverty, and you look around and try to figure out, why can't we make any headway as a family? And yet, over there, I can see people, politicians, swimming in money. Then you become aware of corruption in the system, which does not allow your family to make a living and even to afford certain basic things like education. And then sometimes you struggle. Your parents sell whatever they have. You borrow. You go to school because of the promise that if you can get a good education, you'll get a job. You finish, you get out, and you realize you just cannot find a job. Not because you're not good enough, not because you're not well-educated, but because the system is so corrupt and caters to the family and friends of those in the system in power, the frustration sets in. And over time, you get angry. These young people start getting angry and frustrated, and they're trying to find a way out. So when you couple that with encounters of violence and brutality, say, from those in the authority, when they're trying to ask for certain basic things, you find you're being harassed and bullied. And of course, the anger can boil over. And that is when people, young people, start getting all these ideas that perhaps we need to change things. And the only way we can change things is not through an election, because the system is so rigged that we cannot have an effect through an election. Let's go to the streets, and perhaps that way we can make a change. It is an escalation of things. But and the leadership sometimes is so detached, as Mohola said, they don't seem, I think you mentioned that, they are so disconnected from what's happening on the ground. And if they're not disconnected, they just don't seem to be sensitive. Because you can be observing, but you're not sensitive to the suffering and frustration of those members of your country, just because you have it all. You have a good home. You live in the best part of town. You go to hospitals abroad. Your children are in the best universities and schools abroad, even within the country, the most expensive private schools. Because of that, they're detached and insensitive, and this leads to a lot of frustration amongst the youth of Africa.
Suleiman, it would be in the interest of these leaders to take care of the youth issues and make life better for them. Why do you think they just ignore them?
Douglas, it is absurd and it's very difficult to understand what goes on the heads of these leaders. Because, really, if you look at the elections which we have just had on the continent, and those which are going to happen, like the ones in Uganda, or let me start with the one in Uganda now, like the one in Uganda, if you look at the whole process, the way it is running, there is going to be no election. The whole thing is just a fake. The whole thing is a facade. I mean, as you are saying, while the young people would look for a manifesto as far as the leaders are concerned, you find that the preoccupation of the people who are seeking to be leaders and those in leadership, the preoccupation is about how they have to maintain their lifestyle. And how they have to maintain being in power. When you look at what is happening in Ivory Coast, or what has happened in Guinea, unlike in Malawi life was about how to improve Malawi. The contestants, they were about the manifesto. That is why when the president took over, whoever won, the first announcement was to pull out Malawians from poverty. But now the others, whose mission is to stay in the power, the first day, the first program is to arrest the opposition so that you can stay in your chair unopposed, undisturbed, so that you can maintain. So, as you have said, the biggest problem which we have on the continent, as Vincent has said, is the detachment of the leadership. The leadership has failed to understand that we are dealing with very angry people, with people with hopelessness, with very desperate people. The wave is moving. They want action. I think they are going to sweep these leaders unless they come to their senses.
I see. Well, for those just joining us, you are listening to Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you from the Voice of America here in Washington. Tonight, we are discussing the role, the impact of the youth in African politics. Our panelists are my colleague, Vincent Makori, Managing Editor of VOA's Africa 54, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst, and I'm your host, Douglas Mpuga. Vincent, with advancement in social media and other means of organizing, the youth could be a potent force.
I mean, the youth are tech savvy, and therefore, nowadays, you cannot stop them by blocking roads, by shutting down television stations. They can reach each other through social media. But what I wonder is why those in leadership cannot see the youth as a viable investment. The people who make the future of a country, the youth are basically the future of a country. So instead of seeing them as a group of people you need to fight back against, you want to bring them in, you want to nurture them, you want to open up the space for them to communicate, you want to educate and equip them and give them opportunities. I always see leadership, from my perspective, a leader of a country, if it's a man, he's like a father of a family. If it's a woman, it's a mother of a family. Now, a loving parent sees his children and thinks the best for them. You want them to prosper. When you see your kids growing up, you do everything you can, Anybody who is a parent knows that. You even sacrifice your own comforts. You think about their education. You think about their future. You worry about where they will be, say, even when you're gone. As we grow older, you start to think about the reality of, you know, that someday maybe I won't be there. And all you want, you're obsessed with is, I want my children and whoever comes after them to have a good life. Any leader who cares about his country is like a good father. He should see the youth like his children. He wants to nurture them, to help them, to equip them so that someday in the future they take over, they contribute to the economy. Remember, who are the youth? They're the guys who are going to enter the job market, who should be your economists, your teachers, your soldiers, your policemen, your engineers. They are the tech people who will help any country to propel itself into economic prosperity. Why would you ignore the population of the youth? Why will you ignore the engine of growth, the foundation of a stable future of any country? That does not make sense to me.
You see, Father Suleiman, in the recent years, many of the youth, African youth, have taken to crossing the oceans, crossing into Europe. Many have now been, some say, sold to the Gulf region to work there as the women as maids, the men as seeking for work there and employment. It comes to a time when these youth say enough is enough and this is home and something must change.
And it is happening soon, Douglas. And one sympathizes and fails to understand what these leaders on the continent are thinking. Because, as Douglas has said, if you look at what happened in Egypt, if you look at what happened in Libya, if you look at what happened in Burkina Faso, what happened in Sudan recently, what happened in Mali recently, what has just happened in Nigeria, you just realize that this is a very strong, unstoppable force. It is determined, it is active. As Vincent has said, you cannot close them. Your soldiers cannot close them. Blocking roads is not enough. Museveni in Uganda, Kagame in Rwanda, DRC. DRC thought he would kill. He killed. It reached a time when they could not even go, as you are saying. Time has come when they cannot go anywhere. They have to stay in. Time came when in DRC they had to put their lives on the line. And they did it and they went. Time came in Sudan when the young people had put their lives on the line. They did it and the leader went. Whether Museveni, whether Ouattara, whether Conte, they think they have compromised the security forces, they have reduced the security forces to a level of a personal security company, whether they have reached, national security forces up to that level, still the young people are going to fight against them. They have done it in Burkina Faso, they have done it in Sudan, they have done it in Egypt, they have done it in Mali, they are trying it in Zimbabwe. They are going to oppose them and the regimes will go. So as you have said, the seas are almost closed because of COVID. The seas are closed. Now it is time to be there for themselves. It is time to fight because they have got nowhere to go. They have been pushed on the wall. They are going to fight back. So we just don't know the nature of the revolutions which are coming. Each country has got its own dynamics, but for sure, change is in the making in many of these countries. It is very unfortunate what we are seeing in the continent, before I finish, Douglas, because a country like Tanzania and Zambia, those were the oases of peace in the sub-region and on the continent. One wonders which bug enters into head of a leader to destabilize a country which has been so peaceful, an example, an enviable example on the continent for so many years. You start brutalizing people, you start arresting people over flimsy issues because you want to show your might, because you want to stay in power forever. It is very, very, very unfortunate, but let's hope the youth are going to take responsibility and they are going to teach these leaders a lesson. It is very unfortunate, but it's going to occur, Douglas, whether we like it or not.
Vicent, and the youth, they have on their side the numbers. They have them. So, what do you say to that? And adding on what Suleiman just said,
exactly for that reason, the leadership across the continent should be cognizant of the fact that the future of the entire continent lies in the hands of the youth. The continent now is at a phase where it needs to jump from where it is from. Poverty to development, from just producing raw material to manufacturing to technology. You need the youth. You need the youth that is equipped, that is properly educated, and you need to give them that feeling of confidence and the love for their own country so that they can be there. You shouldn't have so many of your young people aspiring to take dangerous voyages so they can go to some other faraway country, where they will make, of course, contributions once they're there. So the leadership should not see the youth as an enemy. They should see the youth as the most important investment of a country. The continent is young, and the future lies on the shoulders of those young people. So you need to equip them. You need to allow them into the system. You need to create a path for them to join every aspect of the societies, whether it's development or political or economic systems. So if you do that, and any country that has done that has seen itself grow, prosper, because all these young people have amazing ideas, it is sad that those older leaders don't even look back during independence of African countries and recognize that it is those who became the presidents of these countries at the beginning, all young people. They were youth. And some of these leaders also, whether you're talking about Museveni, the times when they were coming into the system, when they were fighting to get into power, they were young people. That proves the point. The young are the future of a nation, but not the enemy that you need to suppress and or frustrate. And again, if you undermine the progress and development of the youth, you're actually not just helping yourself to stay in power. It is a short-lived goal, but you undermine the future of a nation. Like decades after that, get undermined, and Africa may end up, at least some of the countries, stuck in poverty forever because of undermining their youth.
Suleiman, don't you think then in that case it's a matter of time before things flare up?
They are going to flare up whether we like it or not, Douglas and Vincent. The continent is already due for change. And to add on what Vincent has said, it is very absurd, because who wouldn't want to see his own child prosper? Who amongst us is not proud of the Africans who have made it internationally, the Obamas of this world, the Kofanans of this world, the Oralo Tunus of this world? Who is not proud of the so many African doctors whom we have within the continent and out of the continent who are doing immense and very wonderful work? How these people became good doctors, became good engineers, became good scientists, became good administrators and politicians? Because they were nurtured, because they were given a good environment to grow in. The waterers themselves, they became what they became because when they were youth, they found a very good environment. Conte, to become a university lecturer, an environment was created. Some free education was given to him. Someone gave him a scholarship to study outside because the leaders who were there at the time wanted to nurture the youth. So if they had not been given the good education, where would the countries be? If we are going to suffocate the current generation of the youths whom we have on the continent, if we are going to leave them to move on the high seas and to go and clean toilets abroad, whereas they are doctors, whereas they are scientists, whereas they are teachers, whereas they are engineers, then they go and just be in the Gulf, as Vincent said, to be maids. It is very unfortunate. We are doing a disservice as leaders of the continent. You deserve no good place. The only place you deserve is hell, because these young people well-educated. They need to be nurtured. They need to serve the country. They need to serve the people so that we can have a better future for all of us and for our children and grandchildren. Otherwise, what they are doing is wrong, and the country is going to erupt any time. We are sitting on a time bomb. Uganda is sitting on a time bomb. Ivory Coast is sitting on a time bomb. Guinea is sitting on a time bomb. Tanzania, Zambia, they are sitting. Zimbabwe is already staggering. So wherever there is wrong leadership, Cameroon is already, Chad, all these countries, many of these dictators who have refused to leave power, they have only prepared their countries for chaos. Now, sooner or later, there will be violence because, as Vincent has said, they are angry, they are hopeless, they are desperate, they are unstoppable because they can communicate in their way, and they are determined because they have got nowhere to go.
And as we wind down, Vincent, do you see some of these leaders reading the Times and saying, well, maybe it's time for these guys, these youth, to take over or to have a role to play in the governance of their countries?
You know, it will be pleasant surprise. I tend to see that, to feel like so many of them are way beyond seeing any of that. They're so buried in their own, selfish ambition to continue staying in power for too long, that they don't allow themselves to see that. Now, there might be isolated cases here and there, and it will be refreshing to see that. But I don't know. We have to just wait and see, and hopefully this will happen soon enough. But when you see some of these people, even when they're taking over, being sworn in for a third time, and they are all smiles and laughing, and yet what they have done is extremely damaging to their country, and that they have actually brutalized the young people who are probably trying to, speak some sense to them. You feel sad because it means that they don't have any empathy and they don't get it. So I'm a very optimistic person. I'm hoping for a good surprise, but I don't know where it will come from.
Suleiman, briefly, what do you think?
For you to have investment, you need stability. And for you to have stability, you need national consensus. Without national consensus, you cannot have stability. Without stability, you cannot have investment. Without investment, you cannot grow the economy. You cannot fight unemployment. You cannot fight poverty. You cannot do anything. So unless our leadership on the continent realize that we need everybody, and there is no body born to be the only leader in a particular country, unless they turn around, the youths are going to blow up these countries. Even the little which has done, they are going to set it on fire. The example in Nigeria has shown us how determined they can be.
I see. Well, we are out of time, and that wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. Thanks to my colleague Vincent Macori, Managing Editor, VOA's Africa 54, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in Durban, South Africa. Gentlemen, as always, thanks very much for being on the show.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that you can hear our roundtable on the internet. You can access it by going to the Voice of America main website at www.vnews.com. Click on programs and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. Once again, thanks very much for tuning in, and I'm your host, Douglas Impoga, wishing you all the best.
To host Carol Castiel and a panel of experts as they discuss the implications of the transfer of power as Joseph R. Biden was inaugurated as the 46th President of the United States and Kamala Harris is the first woman and person of South Asian and African American descent to be sworn in as Vice President. Listen to Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Peter Clote, the host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's weekend Africa show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. tune in and you will be glad you did. I guarantee it.